Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. We continue with our General Assembly preview this morning from the 88th House District. Delegate Mark Cole back with us this morning. Delegate Cole, it's always good to have you, and good morning.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me.
It's always good to talk General Assembly stuff with you. Boy, this is a different world, though, that you will be going back into.
Certainly is.
The House has changed. What the Republicans now are the minority by, what, about 10 seats?
Yeah, it's, I think, 55-45 right now. And the Senate flipped as well. It's a little bit tighter in the Senate. I think it's 21-19. But for the first time since Doug Wilder was governor, the Democrats have total control in Richmond.
When were you first elected?
I was first elected in 2001.
And
we've had the majority. Republicans have had the majority in the House, I think, since 99.
That's what I thought. So this will be a new experience.
First time I'll be going in as a minority member.
Well, and you've been a committee chair now for a number of years, and you will not have that this time around.
No, actually, it'll probably be a lot easier for me in Richmond as far as responsibilities go. Won't be the focus of a lot of attention as chairman. When you get controversial legislation, you get slammed with phone calls and emails, not just from across Virginia and even across the country. So in some ways it should be a much easier session for me, though I am concerned with the direction that the state's going in.
Well, several people, both on the Republican and Democratic side, have said to me that right away from the first day, you'll notice this is a different General Assembly.
That's correct.
And Delegate Josh Colin the other day said to us that the first bill to be introduced is one that you're familiar with on the Equal Rights Amendment. That will be right away voted on.
Yeah, and I'm sure it will pass, though. I'm not sure it's going to have any effect or any impact because the Equal Rights Amendment expired in 1982. And so really, in my opinion, this is kind of a further indication of a loss of respect to the rule of law. When Congress submitted the Equal Rights Amendment in 1972, they put in a 7-year deadline for ratification. That's something they had done with many other amendments. Some amendments they did not do it. When it appeared to be speeding towards ratification because everybody's for equal rights. When there were concerns raised about the language, it being overly broad and could have unintended consequences. Once that happened, not only did no new states ratify it, but 5 states that had ratified it rescinded their ratification. In 1979, as the deadline approached, Congress extended it to 1982. When no new states ratified it, then Congress let the deadline lapse and it expired. And everyone, both the proponents and opponents of it, you know, recognized that expiration because all efforts to get it ratified stopped for about a decade.
Yeah, we didn't hear about it.
And then in 1992, what happened was the 27th Amendment dealing with congressional pay was ratified. And that was ratified after nearly 200 years. It was originally submitted, I think, with the Bill of Rights and never got ratified, but there were obviously scandals and concerns in Washington about congressional pay and everything. And so some of the states went ahead and ratified it. And the difference was that when Congress submitted that amendment to the states, they didn't put a deadline on it. They did put a deadline on the ERA. And so the proponents of ERA want to ignore facts that they don't like. that you know, the deadline that five states rescinded their ratification. So so they, like I said, they just want to ignore facts they don't like, and we'll see what happens, because you never know how a federal court is going to rule. I suspect that once it passes, there will probably be lawsuits filed, and you know, then it'll be up to ultimately probably the Supreme Court as to whether or not they say, yeah, it's ratified, or no, it expired, you know, almost 40 years ago.
So what happens next week in the General Assembly is really the next. It will get. It will move this issue along.
Yeah, that's correct. And like I said, you know, I think it has expired, and it's not that we don't already have equal rights. We do. You know, the courts have ruled that you already have constitutional protections, and there are numerous laws on the books, both at the federal and state level. Protecting everyone's rights and equal access and all that, including equal pay. It was something my opponent made a big deal out, was she was for equal pay. Well, I am too, and guess what? It's already been in federal and state law for decades.
Yeah.
So anybody who's discriminating on pay based on sex, they're already violating state and federal law.
Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Colin with us this morning. You were chair of the Elections and Privileges Committee that dealt with a lot of these things. One of the bigger bills that over the years that you've had to deal with was the voter ID. Mm-hmm. As much opposition as the Democrats have had to that, do you think that there'll be an effort to change state law?
There will definitely be an effort to repeal the voter ID law that we passed. It's almost a decade ago. You know, I don't know if it will pass or not. The claim is that it's discriminatory. However, when I ask, well, how is it discriminatory? Nobody can explain that to me. They also claim that it causes voter suppression. For more than a decade, when I was chairman of the Privileges and Elections Committee, I solicited input across the state. I said, anybody who has been denied their right to vote because of this voter ID law, yeah, or any other election law, please contact my office, because I want to fix it if it is, in fact, interfering with somebody's legal right to vote. Never heard a word. So all this talk about it being discriminatory and suppressing vote, that is just garbage. In fact, what it does is it increases the confidence in the election results and voter integrity, and repealing it is just going to enable voter fraud.
Well, and voter fraud has become such an issue that everyone's concerned about.
And it is a problem in Virginia. Every election, there is a certain degree of voter fraud, and election fraud going on.
Well, there's very, very few things anymore that you can do without showing ID,
that's correct.
Rightfully so.
That's correct. And so, like I said, those who are pushing to repeal it, all they are doing is enabling voter fraud.
The other issue, and I think you introduced the bill last year on the redistricting commission.
Yes,
and it passed, but it's got to pass again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I get that will be interesting to see how that does with another General Assembly.
Yeah. And one of the things I said during the campaign is the best way to make sure it passes again is to make sure Republicans control at least one house in the General Assembly. Now that Democrats have total control, some of them are backing off their previous support of that, because they want to basically gerrymander their districts to favor Democrats. And so we'll see how it goes. We're certainly going to keep pushing to get that amendment passed again. And all it would do, it wouldn't set up the independent commission. It would just put it before the voters this November. And so the voters would be able to decide if they want an independent commission to draw the district lines for the General Assembly and their congressional representatives.
And as big an issue as this has become, I would think that all these groups that have pushed for reform would welcome this.
Yeah, well, I would hope they would. Though some of them that were involved in it, they were partisan. They just wanted to make sure that Democrats could control the process. And through our negotiations last year, we made sure that no political party could dominate the independent commission. And that's why I wanted to get it in the state constitution to make it more difficult to repeal. Once it's in the Constitution, it requires the voters to approve any changes to the Constitution. And so we'll see. But the way constitutional amendments work for the state Constitution is they have to pass two successive General Assembly sessions with an election in between it. So, before it can go to the voters for approval, it needs to pass this General Assembly again.
Well, this will be interesting to see just to see what happens, and like you say, with now those who wanted to have changes in redrawing, you'll get to see is that what they really were after?
Yeah, that's correct. We'll find out.
88th House District Member Mark Colin this morning from the General Assembly, Fauquier, Spotsylvania, and Stafford is a part of his district. We will continue when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Colin with us this morning as we preview the General Assembly. I can't believe Delegate Cole, that it's just the way the calendar has worked, because usually after New Year's, it seems that you have sometimes a couple of weeks before that second Wednesday rolls around. But because of the calendar this year, you're there next week.
Yeah, it all starts next week. And normally session starts off kind of slow, but it builds very quickly. Within a week or two, things get rolling and move very fast. We're a part-time legislature, and this will be the long session. So we're going to be down there for 60 days, and we'll be dealing with thousands of bills and pieces of legislation. So once things get rolling, they move very quickly, and you don't have a whole lot of time to dig into the details of the bills. So what most legislators do is they pay attention, one, to their own legislation that they're putting in, and those that come to the committees they're assigned to, and then the ones that actually make it to the floor to for a vote.
So I wondered how you can, because there's no way, as these bills come up sometimes, it's just bang, 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 bang.
Yeah, and you get very short notice as to when, because normally the way it works is you have hearings on bills in subcommittee, and then the full committee may or may not have a hearing on it. But you get very, very short notice. It could be a matter of 12 hours notice or so that your bill is coming up for a hearing in a subcommittee. And so, like I said, you have to be, your schedule is very fluid down there once things start rolling.
Speaking of your legislation, the last few years you have put some things in and have been successful about getting some studies and things done related to I-95.
Yeah, and that study's still underway. We'll hopefully see what the recommendations are on it. But I sponsored the resolution last year to have the Commonwealth Transportation Board study I-95 from our area north to the Beltway, because that is the one of the most congested areas, not just in Virginia, but in the entire country. And certainly it needs action. I would like to see another lane added to the regular travel lanes. They've been doing a lot of work with the hot lanes, the high occupancy lanes, which is fine. But really, we need to relieve the congestion that's on the regular travel lanes as well.
Well, is long, and I know the area localities sometimes in FAMPO has all been at times frustrated with the pace of things and studies, and your bills did seem to get some studying and did seem to get that moving.
Yeah, it did. It did. I was trying to focus VDOT's attention on the problem areas. I mean, we've got a lot of work going on in the area on I-95 already. But like I said, what really needs to be done is we need to expand the capacity of the regular travel lanes, hopefully we'll see the something constructive will come out of the study.
Any other bills that you're looking at putting in this session?
Well, I do have some kind of local nuts and bolts bills, and then the main thing I'm going to be pushing for is to, like we talked about, the redistricting, get that passed again, and also on transportation, we're going to work with trying to get the formula for this, what projects get funded. Get that changed, I think to help our area and make it focus on where the congestion is worse, and hopefully that'll go through and get us some more state resources in the area.
Is that the smart scale?
Smart scale. That's correct.
Because I know we have. Mark Dudenheffer, the supervisor in Stafford, has complained very long and hard about how Stafford has really missed out on some funding.
Yeah, there's two things. One, the funding is limited, but two, the way they score these projects, I think needs to change. To focus on congestion and not just congestion, their traffic model only measures like Monday through Friday traffic. It needs to be expanded for 7 days a week, because anybody that lives in this area knows that Sunday is probably the worst day on I-95. It's like it's rush hour all afternoon long on Sunday on I-95. So
anytime you go over it or see it, right. And on the weekends, it's just, especially Sunday, it's just stopped.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, so we're trying to, work with them to get those changes made. And really it's something that probably should have been done to begin with.
Well, and you see things from a unique perspective too, just being involved in local government and with what you are in Spotsylvania and seeing what traffic is doing just with economic development in this area.
Yep. And there's a move again by some of the more liberal members in the General Assembly to take zoning authority away from local government. And saying that they cannot restrict townhouses and apartment complexes and things like that, which I think would be disastrous. Zoning and growth decisions have traditionally it always been a local government responsibility, and now you have some of the Democrat legislators that are wanting to take that authority away from local government.
But I would think that something like that would be devastating. The whole proffers debate a few years ago created a problem. I think this is even way worse than that.
Yeah, it would. I mean, if you think things, and people complain about the growth all the time, but if you think it's bad now, just wait until your zoning decisions are made by the General Assembly. It will be even worse. But there is that tendency, not just at state government, but at every level, a level of government, to micromanage. Washington tries to micromanage the states, and state government tries to micromanage localities, and then some localities try to micromanage your lives. So, but that's something I think we need to resist.
Boy, you think of that, and you think of how important the role of a planning commission is, and that would effectively write off what a local planning commission would do.
Well, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's a move, to take some of the local zoning authority away from local governments, and say that these decisions are no longer within your purview, and that's I think that's just crazy.
Are your office again going to be in the Pocahontas building again this year?
Yeah, we're still in there. The new General Assembly building is probably still another 3 or 4 years away from opening up. So General Assembly offices are still in the Pocahontas building.
I have not been down in that part of Richmond lately. The old General Assembly building, has that
it's
now been
gone.
Taken down?
It's gone except for one wall that they're preserving.
Oh, okay.
A facade, I'm sure it added millions of dollars to the cost of the project, but that's what they decided to do to try to preserve one of the old facades.
Okay.
And so it's totally gone now. Like I said, except for that one wall, and they should be starting on, constructing the new building, if they haven't already, very, very shortly.
Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Delegate Mark Cole here this morning. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is 8:30.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Colin with us this morning. General Assembly begins on Wednesday. Again, it's a 60-day session. It's a long session. We'll get into a little bit of the budget before we get out of here this morning. But a huge issue, and we have seen people come out in droves in both Spotsylvania and Stafford with the Second Amendment sanctuary. Guns are going to be an issue, and there are some bills that I think have surprised a lot of people when they've actually gone and read them.
Yeah, the sad part is that they shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, because Democrats have been putting in these kind of bills for years. It's just that we've been killing them in committee, so they never see the light of day. But now, people are paying attention, for one, and they have a chance of actually passing. They talk about one of the big ones they're pushing is a, quote, assault weapons ban. Well, it's not really banning assault weapons. What it is banning any weapon that has certain characteristics. Like, I have a .22 rifle that has like a pistol grip on it, and therefore, even though it's just a .22 rifle, you would use to shoot varmint with, it because it has this pistol grip to it. It is defined as an assault weapon, and if the Democrats get their way, it would be a felony for anybody to possess that. Which is just crazy. One, I'm not sure it's constitutional for them to just outright, make these items illegal to possess, because people have lawfully owned and bought these products, and government would be denying them their property without just compensation, which I'm not sure would be constitutional for them to do under that clause. But also, the legitimate argument could be made that it violates the Second Amendment as well.
I would think that any politician on whatever side you're on guns have noticed the number of people that were both in Spotsylvania and in Stafford. To me, both of those meetings went late into the night. People stayed outside. Both of those were cold, rainy nights, and there were thousands of people.
Yeah, it was. I was at the one in Spotsylvania, and I've never seen a crowd that large come to any Spotsylvania board meeting before.
No, and there have been some pretty big issues over the years, some rezoning things that brought in a lot of people. Right. Same thing.
No, it dwarfed even what you get for the budget public hearing. Mm-hmm. Public hearing is always the largest meeting of the year. There were probably 3 or 4 times as many people out for that meeting is what we get for a budget public hearing. And so I'm hoping that some of the elected officials in Richmond are paying attention to this, because vast majority of localities have passed Second Amendment resolutions in supporting the Second Amendment. And so, like I said, I just hope that the politicians in Richmond are paying attention to this.
You'd wonder too, and if the people that have now that have risen up and spoken, I know there a rally is planned in Richmond, and mm-hmm. I'm imagining, just based on the enthusiasm right now for this issue, that there's going to be a lot of people.
I would expect that there will be a huge crowd down in Richmond on this issue. And really, with any gun control law, I mean, the only people that obey gun control laws are people who are not going to commit a crime to begin with. Somebody who has criminal intent, it doesn't matter if it's a gun-free zone. It doesn't matter if the weapon that they have is illegal to possess or not. They're already of a mind to commit a crime, so they're not going to be deterred by any gun control law. All it does, gun control laws do, is make it harder for law-abiding citizens and business owners to defend themselves and to defend their property.
And I know that With some of these bills, even the sponsors of the bill will say that things that that they would not have changed what happened
right.
with the Virginia Beach
shooting,
for instance.
None of them would. And I am going to be putting in legislation that would have impacted the Virginia Beach tragedy, because the legislation I'm putting forward, I'd put it in at the special session. And I'm going to reintroduce it, but would say that if any locality does not allow the employees with concealed carry permits to possess a weapon at work, then they have to provide armed security in that building. So I think it's reasonable mm-hmm. that if you're not going to allow your employees to be able to defend themselves if a shooter comes in, that you have armed security there to defend them.
Well, and the situation that occurred just this past weekend in Texas showed the value of that, because that would have been who knows what kind of a tragedy that would
absolutely,
have been.
Absolutely, absolutely. The sad fact is that the best defense against a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
Yeah. Well, and I guess I know we've talked about this before, just about how frustrating it has been for you at times that there are answers to some of these issues with dealing with guns.
Yeah.
And you don't always have to take this role of let's restrict a constitutional right.
And it's just like, any right, they say when an act of terrorism occurs that it's done by one of a Muslim terrorist, they're quick to say, look, you can't judge all Muslims that by the act of a few, and that's certainly correct. But they, at the same time, they want to judge all gun owners by the acts of a very small few, and again, that's just not right. Guns are used far more to protect lives and to deter crime than they are to commit crime.
A couple other issues I know that are going to be big: raising the minimum wage.
Yep.
And there's talk of within a couple of years of having it to $15.
Yeah, get it up to $15, which I think will actually hurt in the short term. It will hurt the people that they claim that it will help. It's just going to make it harder for people who are unskilled, those just entering the workforce, and even senior citizens who are just looking to supplement their income. It's all going to make it much, much harder for them to find jobs. It's going to put some small businesses out of business, because they just won't be able to afford that. And it may kick off another round of inflation. Because I don't care what you set the minimum wage to, within a few years, the market will adjust,
mm-hmm.
and whatever they set as the minimum wage will no longer be a, quote, living wage. You know, after they make it $15 an hour, a few years later, they'll be complaining, oh, nobody can live on $15 an hour. We've got to make it $20 or $25 an hour. And all it does, like I said, is make it harder for unskilled labor, for young people entering the workforce to find jobs. And it makes our products more expensive in on the international market when it comes to trade. So really, the minimum wage is it sounds good in theory, but it's it causes more harm than good.
Well, and we're starting to see it with more and more businesses having either the self checkout or the only way you order is automated.
Well, what these businesses will do, because they can't afford to pay unskilled labor $15 an hour. They will just reduce, they'll cut back hours, cut back on employees, and increase automation. And like I said, the end result is the people that they claim it will help are the ones who will truly suffer.
Another issue, Delegate Mark Colin with us this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Virginia's right to work law is up for debate, and We'll see what happens with it. This was one issue I over the years, when it first came up a year or two ago, I was surprised to even hear it. I didn't know it was even being questioned. But yeah. There could be some significant changes.
Well, yeah. Some in the Democrat Party definitely want to repeal the state's right to work law. And all it does is protect you from having to join a union you don't want to join in order to be able to work. The Democrat Party has always been a tool of the big unions, and there are definitely those who are going to push to repeal the right to work law, which is really one of the laws that has made Virginia a business friendly state and was one of the reasons why our economy normally outperforms the national economy. And so I think it would be a major problem for us to repeal that law.
Because Virginia was last year number one again.
Yeah, number one, business friendly state.
And I think I've heard that no state that's ever won that has always been a state that's had the right to work law.
Well, like I said, if some of the Democrats get their way, Virginia's going to be a business unfriendly state. It's going to mean you're going to be paying higher taxes. There's going to be fewer jobs and less prosperity.
Back to gun laws, and I meant to ask you about this. The red flag laws are something also that's being talked about, and there are a lot of implications there.
And certainly nobody wants anyone who has been deemed to be a threat to themselves or other or have mental issues, mental instability, to be able to possess a gun. There's already laws on the book on how to handle that. What they want to do is make it so that the police can go in and take somebody's guns just based on an accusation. And then that person would have to go to court to try to get their guns back. And that's a slippery slope I do not think we want to go down. Happens, with the Second Amendment issue, it's going to be a slippery slope with other constitutional rights like your First Amendment right to free speech. Mm-hmm. They'll pass hate speech laws that will make it harder for you to be able to speak what's on your mind. And so overall, I'm just concerned about the loss of respect for our constitutional rights and this tendency for government to step in and try to micromanage.
The governor has kind of put out in piecemeal some budget recommendations. Anything that you've seen that either you support or you've got some concerns with?
He's proposed, I think, about a half a billion dollars worth of new taxes and fees to raise revenue, and I'm concerned about that. you know, its impact overall on the economy. And our economy has been doing so well in this past year that we do have additional revenues coming in. So I don't see the need for us to be raising taxes and fees to fund all these new spending requests that the governor is putting in.
Like we said at the beginning, it will be interesting for you this session, just being in the minority.
Yeah.
And especially with now Republicans have no say in anything at the moment.
Yeah, that's correct. Now there are times that where they're going to need some Republican votes because some things require a supermajority. Mm-hmm. We'll see how that goes. So I don't know that they'll be, too, bold in some of the things they do. But like I said at the start of the interview, that for the first time since Doug Wilder was governor, Democrats have total control of the state. The problem is that this new Democrat Party is far more liberal and far more socialist than the Democrat Party was when Doug Wilder was in control. On a lot of issues, Doug Wilder was fairly conservative, especially on fiscal issues. So unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot of Democrats like Doug Wilder in Richmond anymore.
Well, you take a look at just the issues we've talked about and compare over the years as we have talked about things. Just even if a few of these that we have talked about pass, that will be pretty significant.
It will be. And overall, like I said, I'm concerned about the direction of Virginia. We've always been a fairly conservative state, and I think it's served Virginia well. We've protected individual liberties, made Virginia a great place to work and raise a family, and I'm afraid we're going to start seeing that slipping away little by little.
Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Colin from the 88th House District. We'll wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Opinions, we've all got them, and we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Cole with us this morning from the 88th District. Fauquier, Spotsylvania, and Stafford are the...
Fredericksburg as well.
Oh, you're Fredericksburg
too. Part of Fredericksburg.
That's right. Yep. That is right. But compare me that... Most House districts don't include that many localities. I guess it's just kind of where...
Yeah, well, it depends. Whenever they did redistricting, this was probably started 20 years ago when this district moved from Hampton Roads up to here.
Yeah.
You kind of draw, districts to try to keep them compact. And then a lot of times you have what's left in the middle of them, and those end up kind of being scrapple districts. And I think that was partially what happened with the 88th district.
And how could I forget about the 88th? Because, you were in a way involved in all the confusion.
Yeah.
Couple years ago with that race.
So. I've had legislation over the years to fix a lot of these split precincts, but the Democrats and either both Governor Northam and Governor McAuliffe vetoed them. So anyways, don't blame me for the split precinct fiasco.
Before we get out of here, one of the things we keep hearing about is free access to community colleges. And I know you've always said whenever the word free is involved, it's not really free.
No, nothing is for free. Somebody is paying for it. The governor's proposal, it's kind of overly complex. It requires community service, so it's not really even you know, free community college. It's more like indentured servitude for community college, if you will. I'm not really supportive of it. I do like our community colleges. I think they're the best higher education value we have in the Commonwealth. I went to a community college. Two of my children went to community colleges, so I think they're a great value. I think the governor would have been better off, instead of setting aside this $145 million to fund this new program, if he would have just used that to fund the community colleges, let them expand their programs, let them lower their tuition for everybody. I think that would have been a much better move than what he's proposing here. But you know, he's trying to be Santa Claus and give stuff away for, quote, free. But again, anytime government does anything, nothing is for free. Somebody is paying for it, and usually it's you.
If people want to get a hold of you during the session, I know there are a number of different ways. You're on social media and all kinds of things.
I'm on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. Also, my webpage is www.markelcole.com. Markelcole.com. Don't forget the L in the middle, and it has all my contact information on it.
There's obviously another Mark Cole out there somewhere.
There are a lot of Mark Coles out there.
Well, this is going to be an interesting session, and there are ways to follow the floor sessions. And committee meetings are streamed.
Yeah, they're streamed online, so you can go to the General Assembly webpage and get details if you want to watch your General Assembly in action. And I use that term in both ways, in action or inaction.
Committee meetings, I had not seen committee meetings in a number of years, and it was interesting last year to watch.
Yeah.
Committee meetings.
Yeah.
And I guess there's even a
That's where most of the work is done.
Yeah.
In the committees. Like I said, we get thousands of bills put in every year, and most of them don't make it out of committee. The committees work on them, they combine them, they amend them. And so, like I said, most of the heavy lifting occurs in the committees.
Well, and because I remember watching a few on some of the issues that you were involved in, where legislators, you're able to ask some really pointed questions on these things.
Yeah, and that's also, you know, the public hearings and committees, that's where you shine the light on what legislation actually is doing.
Well, it's gonna, as we said, it will be interesting to see what Virginia looks like in 60 days, days.
Yeah, and most of the laws that we pass in the General Assembly in session, they don't become effective until 1 July. So.
MarkLCole.com. Delegate Cole, thank you so much. We'll see you soon.
All right, thank you very much.
That's it. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.